Aloha, I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. Welcome to The Body Show. Each week we talk about health and fitness, but nothing replaces a visit to your own primary care provider. When was the last time you had a medical emergency and found yourself in one of the local emergency rooms? Well, you probably were not alone, because these days there are a lot of folks who are having medical conditions that require urgent attention, and they find themselves in either long waiting lines in emergency rooms, or even if they're admitted, sometimes they have to stay in the ER because our hospitals tend to have a very high census and they're getting full. So what are the types of common conditions that should bring someone to the emergency room? Well, today I am happy to be joined by Dr. Jason Fleming. He is an emergency room specialist at Kuakini Medical Center, and we are going to be talking today about reasons why you should go to the ER and maybe some reasons why you could be seen in an urgent care or even see your own doctor in the next couple of days. So thank you for joining me today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Dr. Kozak.
Well, thank you for all the hard work that you do. Being an emergency room doctor is something that, you know, I easily, when I was in practice, I could tell people, you know, you look too sick for my office. I think you ought to go to the ER. But that's where they were headed, was to see docs like you. The fact that I had that backup always made things quite a lot easier. But those sorts of situations are, luckily, in an office practice, few and far between. But these days, the census in most emergency rooms is quite high. Everybody seems to be heading your way. What sort of things are you seeing?
Well, it's been very busy the last few months in Hawaii, across the whole system. Every hospital has been busy in the emergency department. Our EMS folks are working very, very hard. And part of that is seasonal. During the winter months, we have more coughs, colds, flus. School cycle, when people come out of school for the winter break, and then come back into school in January, is always associated with a spike in infectious disease, because kids are seeing each other again after a few weeks. They're giving each other colds and flus. Those kids are bringing it home to their families, and then we see it running through the community.
Now, this generally happens seasonally. We see that sometimes in the winter months, we start to see influenza cases come up, pneumonia cases come up right around this time of year, hopefully kind of lowering right now, March, April, May. But are there things that you see, particularly, you know, when we talk about the last couple of years dealing with COVID, that's still out there. People are still coming to the ER for it. Should everybody just test at home and stay at home if they feel okay? We're not really telling everybody rush to the emergency room anymore, but those people you do see, they tend to be pretty sick.
Yeah, that's right. At this phase in the pandemic, most people who wanted to get vaccinated have been vaccinated, and many people have had COVID at least once now. I mean, the pandemic started 4 years ago. Can you believe it? We've been in this
four years ago. Wow.
And at this point, most of the COVID infections that we're seeing are milder. The symptoms are milder, and people are not getting that kind of destroyed lungs syndrome that we saw in the first phase of the pandemic. But it's much more transmissible, so more people are getting it and catching it maybe for a second or third time. And what we've found is that young, otherwise healthy people, especially people who've been vaccinated, feel terrible when they have COVID. They have a variety of symptoms, including some gastrointestinal symptoms, some respiratory symptoms, and just feeling terrible with high fevers sometimes and body aches, feeling tired. But the folks that are really at risk are at the extremes of age, the very young, the very old, and folks who have not an intact immune system for one reason or another, people who are on chemotherapy or who have some kind of immunologic problem. Those folks are still at risk for more severe disease. What we see in the senior citizens who get COVID is a kind of syndrome where they get so sick that they lose the interest that they have in eating and drinking and become dehydrated very quickly. And when they come to the emergency department, they can have electrolyte problems like sodium or kidney function problems, and they just feel so weak that it's hard for them to get out of bed and do their activities of daily living. So it's still important, even in this phase of the pandemic, even for folks who have done everything right and gotten vaccinated, to test themselves when they get sick. And if they have COVID, to isolate and make sure they don't transmit that to other people in their families and in the community.
So if somebody were to come to the ER and be dehydrated, other than looking at laboratory studies, what are some of the other signs that, like, just a casual person might see in their loved one or their grandparents or their elderly relatives that might indicate, oh, we got troubles?
Yeah, exactly. One of the things that we hear time and time again is something's just not right with grandma, or my mom is just not herself, or grandpa is too weak to get out of bed today, or he's not making sense, right? So the signs can be subtle, but if your radar for something going wrong is triggered, then that's by itself a good reason to seek medical attention. And that can come in the form of contacting your primary care physician. But if the situation is kind of out of control or something that you can't handle at home, for example, somebody that could walk before now can't get out of bed, that's a major change. That person should come in and get seen right away. And an emergency department is a reasonable place to go for that.
Now, while you're dealing with people who are coming in with these respiratory infections, whether it be flu, pneumonia, COVID, you've still got the standard heart attacks and strokes and other emergencies coming your way.
That's true. It turns out people continue to get sick with the usual stuff, no matter what else is going on. So the emergency department is such a great place. I fell in love with that in medical school. We take care of anyone for anything at any time. And that includes heart attacks, strokes, and folks who think they might be having a heart attack or a stroke. And it falls to us in the emergency department to disentangle what's going on right now, get to the heart of the matter, and make the diagnosis about what's going on. Is it an emergency? And do you need to stay in the hospital for it? Or is there no evidence for an emergency and you get to go home today?
And finding out there's not an emergency doesn't necessarily mean that you have the exact diagnosis. It means that you're not so sick you have to stay in the hospital, but you may still need to do follow-up testing with your regular doctor or do some other further workup.
That's true. The majority of cases that come into the emergency department, even if we do many, many tests, those patients end up leaving the emergency department without knowing precisely why they had those symptoms. And that's because we can order every test. If those tests come back normal or without giving us, you know, a clear answer as to what the cause was, well, in the end, we're left with no evidence that points us in one direction or another, except maybe what our gut tells us or what the patient's gut is telling them. And what I discuss with my patients is, look, something is causing all of this. Even if we haven't found out what it is today, I believe something's causing it. And so the next step is, you know, you get to go home because we've found no evidence for an emergency today, but you got to follow up with your primary care physician because things change over time. And sometimes a day or two later, an additional symptom will arise, and that will give us the clue that points us in the right direction.
Yeah, I always tell people that's not a bad finding. The fact that they let you go home is good. It's just that, you know, sometimes it's not so obvious. And you, like you mentioned, the evolution of symptoms or something new that comes along that potentially could alter what you would do because there's something that's changed. Sometimes doing blood tests one day doesn't show anything, and 3 days later, everything becomes apparent.
One of the things we teach the medical students early on is this phrase that comes from generations ago called the tincture of time. And the tincture of time means just give this a little bit more time and more of the answer will become apparent.
That's, to me, great advice. I always think that just giving it a little bit of time will help us to determine what's going on and if there's any need for any urgent attention. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. You're listening to The Body Show. When we come back, we're going to continue our discussion with Dr. Fleming about common things that present to the emergency room and are there ways that we could help keep ourselves well and maybe even not get sick enough to need your attention, although we appreciate it. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Support for The Body Show comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Ulupono Initiative.
Welcome back to The Body Show. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak here with Dr. Jason Fleming from the Kuakini Medical Center Emergency Room, and he has been in practice for almost 2 decades, is that right?
Or more? Oh, yeah, over 20 years now.
Over 20 years, yeah. And seen pretty much anything you could possibly see in an emergency room. I think I love the way you put it. We see everybody for anything all of the time. And that inclusiveness is wonderful, but daunting at the same time, because, you know, there's nothing that you aren't supposed to be able to at least recognize or do something to handle. That's kind of a scary proposition.
That's true. You know, it makes me think back to when I was a medical student. I went to medical school here in Hawaii. I was born and raised in Hawaii. We have a fantastic medical school here. And during that time, I remember seeking out the hardest rotations to do. And when I matched in residency, I picked the hardest residency training program I could. And the whole reason was thinking about someday in the future when I was going to be by myself as an attending physician in an emergency department in Honolulu and have very little backup, perhaps. And the only thing I was going to have at that point was the sum total of all the training I had done. And I didn't want at that moment to wish that I had worked harder during training. And every day I walk through those doors in the emergency department, I feel so blessed that I get to be in that position. I get to have the most exciting job that I've ever heard of in my life. And I get to serve the people of Honolulu that did so much for me when I was growing up here.
Well, that's an amazing statement of just intent and inspiration. Now, what are some of the other common things that are coming to the emergency room? You love to walk through the doors. Let's say it's, you know, Friday, because things always happen on Fridays, right? So you're there in the night shift on Friday. You're walking through the doors. What are the common types of things that you're seeing?
Well, I work at Kuakini Medical Center. And so we're kind of a general medical center. But many of our patients tend to be more like toward the senior citizen age group.
We're all getting there, Jason. We're all getting there.
Oh, believe me, I know. It's not the years, it's the mileage. I think I'm getting there pretty fast. But what we'll see when we walk through the doors on a Friday night is an emergency room that's full of action. There's hardworking nurses that are running around, taking care of patients, doing all the tasks associated with that. And the patients that are in there will be a mix of illnesses and injuries. Illnesses would be patients who believe or have the sensation that something is going wrong in some part of their body. And the injuries, well, that's obvious. Something has happened to them and caused an injury of a body part or of many body parts at once. And the emergency physician's job is to look at all of the information that's available to them at that moment and make decisions about what tests, if any, need to be performed right now to get to an answer about whether there's an emergency happening for that patient right now. Not every illness or injury is an emergency. And we don't expect the patients to always know which injury or which symptom is an emergency. What we want is for people to recognize something's wrong, that it could be an emergency, and to seek medical attention right then.
So what sorts of conditions do you think would be okay to take care of in like an urgent care setting versus an emergency room setting? I always thought the perfect combination would be the co-location of both of those, that, you know, you walk in and somebody triages you and says, you know, you need to go to the urgent care, you know, you need to go to the ER. That to me would be optimal, but that's unfortunately not the reality for a lot of medical centers. What sorts of things could go to an urgent care versus something that needs to be in an ER?
Most urgent cares have a physician on duty, and that physician has some resources available to them in the urgent care. Typically, that includes being able to fix cuts, so suture material and so forth, minor injuries. It typically means an X-ray machine on site or right next door, and the ability to manage broken bones to the extent of putting a splint or a half cast on it to stabilize that injured extremity, and then discharge that person to go follow up with an orthopedic surgeon, for example. Colds, flus, work notes, prescriptions, those are straightforward and can easily be handled by an urgent care. But when the question is, am I having a heart attack today? Am I having a stroke? Why can't I wake up grandma? Like, those are much more complex in terms of the diagnostic workup and should definitely go to an emergency department.
Work notes drives me crazy. I honestly think we should banish work notes, because I can't recall how many hundreds, if not thousands, of cases over the course of many years did I have patients see me just because they needed a note. they go to the ER, and if they need a note, I just feel like if a note is the purpose, we should have a better system so that you don't have to do that.
Totally agree. But every time that sense creeps into my brain, I remember this is not the patient's fault. Like, they find themselves
their fault, exactly,
in a system that's requiring them to get a note from a doctor. That's the requirement. And not everybody has access to a doctor immediately when they need that note. So, yeah, they come to the emergency department. And if I see those folks, you know, we find out what's going on, we give them the note that they need, and they can be out the door real quick.
I want to fix the system so that they don't need the note, because I think that would make it easier for the patients, for the system, for healthcare, for the ERs, and, you know, in the end, also for employers. I mean, at some point, you kind of have to trust your employees if they're going to come to work, and if they're sick, you want them to stay home. So there you are walking in the door. So you have some injuries on Friday night. You have some medical conditions, illnesses, heart attacks, strokes. If somebody thinks they're having something serious like that, they should not drive themselves or have a loved one drive them to the emergency room if they think they're having a heart attack or a stroke. And there's quite a few reasons why. But from your perspective, receiving these people in the emergency room, what are some of the reasons why you shouldn't drive yourself?
Sure. There's some really good reasons. First is, we've all heard stories of accidents on the highway happening because somebody had a medical event when they were operating the vehicle. And tragically, some of those end up injuring other innocent people who are also on the road, or a car will go onto a sidewalk and cause injury. We don't want to see any of that. So if there's any risk that somebody is actually having a medical emergency, we do not want that person to get behind the wheel of a car and drive all the way to town to one of the hospitals from Hawaii Kai or from Kaneohe or wherever. But there are other good reasons not to do that also. There are some conditions where treatment can be initiated by the paramedics. Our paramedics in Honolulu are fantastic. I have done my training on the mainland in New England. I've seen many different kinds of EMS systems. The one we have in Hawaii is excellent. It's got great leadership and great people working in the ambulances. They're very well trained, and they can often start the interventions right when they arrive at somebody's home, saving precious minutes. Another good reason is some conditions are best treated at certain target hospitals that have specialty lines of effort that they've built up for the benefit of the community. And those paramedics are trained to recognize those conditions and then route the ambulance to the very best target hospital to get the treatment that the patient needs.
So strokes, for example, if they might need to have some special medication or special intervention done, then they need to go to a hospital that can handle that.
That's correct. That's a great example, because the condition of stroke has a very tight window within which we can give medicines to try to reverse the effects of the stroke. So somebody who has a sudden onset of loss of function in a part of their body, they can't speak, or half of their body doesn't work anymore. If we can get to them in a very tight window, which is 3 to 4.5 hours, then we can give a powerful blood thinner medicine that can often bust up the clot that's in their brain that's causing it. And some of those people get return of function or even recover completely after that. But the only hope to give that medicine is for folks to come to an emergency department that's capable of giving it within that window.
And you can't do that if you're driving or having somebody in your family drive you there.
Right. We just don't want anybody to put themselves or the rest of the community at risk. And because there's some information that's invisible to the patients that we know within the system, we want to make sure patients get to the hospitals that can serve them the best.
All right. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak, and you're listening to The Body Show. We're going to continue our discussion with Dr. Jason Fleming from Kuakini Medical Center. And we're going to talk about, if you were to go to the ER, what information should you bring along with you to make your health care even better? We'll be right back.
Support for The Body Show comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors Honolulu Waldorf School and Noheia Gallery.
Welcome back to The Body Show. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak, here with Dr. Jason Fleming from Kuakini Medical Center. He is heading up the emergency room there. And right before the break, we were talking about why you don't want to have yourself or your loved one drive you to the emergency room if you think you're having a stroke or a heart attack, because even though you think it might be quicker, there's actually some things that can be done through our amazing EMS network even before you leave your house that can help to treat you and get you to the most appropriate location of care. Now let's talk about what happens when you're walking through the emergency room doors, you see these people, and you want to start taking care of some patients. There are a couple of things that would be helpful for them to have with themselves on their person or having a list of some type. What makes it easier when you see someone in the emergency room to be able to understand what's going on with them? What could they bring?
What a fantastic question, because we run into this every single day at work. Minutes matter in the emergency department, and the triage nurses, the physicians, they're trying to make sense of whatever your symptoms are when you come to the emergency department. And that means not just paying attention to what you're experiencing right now, but putting that all into the broader context of your healthcare situation, of your medical history, the medications you're on, what you're allergic to, and a wide variety of other things. So it's extremely helpful when people come to the emergency department to have that information, maybe even print it out on a piece of paper that could be handed to a triage nurse. Because while the physician may be working on you and listening to your heart and lungs and asking you questions, then that piece of paper can be used by the triage nurse to input information into our system and start to paint the broader picture of what is happening to this human being who's lying before us right now.
And even though it might be in an electronic medical record, we don't necessarily have records that communicate with every medical center all immediately within a couple of clicks of a couple of buttons. That it's, you know, you still need to have a list.
Yeah, that's right. You know, we've come a long way, and technology is permeating every aspect of healthcare now. But I always wince just a little when patients, well-meaning or their families, say, oh, just look in my medical record. And I know why people say that, because, well, it's complicated. And there's a lot of information, and I might mispronounce a medicine, and I don't want to get anything wrong, right? All of those thoughts are probably going through somebody's mind when we're in that moment. But the amount of minutes it would take me to leave that person's bedside, go to a computer, pull it up, try to search for their records, and then find that half of them are housed at another facility that I don't have access to. Well, all of that is valuable time that took me away from the direct line between meeting the patient, finding out what's wrong with them, and then treating them. So one way that everybody can help with that is make sure the critical pieces of information are written out on a piece of paper, a card, or whatever. Carry that in your wallet. Give it to your children, your parents, whoever might accompany you to the emergency department, so that when that moment happens and you're there with a triage nurse, you can just pull that piece of paper out and hand it to them. I'll tell you, I have seen patients who had a copy of their EKG, their last EKG with them. Super helpful in the emergency department, because then when we do one, we can compare it to whatever you had at your doctor's office the last time. So the more information you can bring to us in that form, the better.
So bring a list of your medications with the doses, because sometimes that makes a difference, but also a list of your medical conditions, because, you know, a lot of times you'll hear, oh, well, Uncle Joe has a heart problem, but you don't know which heart problem. There could be a whole plethora of different possibilities there. And unless you really can narrow it down, that doesn't help as so much if Uncle Joe is the patient. So making sure that you have a list of the medical conditions, a list of your medications, allergies, that's really important. People forget sometimes. I'm allergic to, you know, the blue pills. What? Which ones are those? I'm allergic to the purple ones, huh? So making sure you have your allergies listed. Kind of like a little half sheet you just keep with your wallet, keep with different things that can make sure that you're up to date with all of your medical conditions. So that, should you be unconscious, should you be taken to the emergency room by somebody who doesn't know you well, then you would have all that information available.
Yeah, exactly. One of the most stressful parts of an emergency department visit is all these questions that start coming at you when you're the patient or you're accompanying a patient. And you can get rid of all of that and just focus on your loved one who's there in the bed by having this all printed out ahead of time and just slide it across the counter to the triage nurse.
Now, another thing that I often hear patients complain about, and I know that there's a reason why we do it, is they say, I just told the nurse all that information. Can't you go talk to her? I just told the doctor, the other doctor who saw me. Can't you just go ask them? But there is a reason why we go through asking these questions, even if we ask them more than once. Why?
There's two reasons for that. The first is that humans are storytelling creatures. And if you've ever heard somebody tell a story or think back to your parents telling you a story, it's in the retelling of the story that the listener learns more and more, that the details get fleshed out. And sometimes in the emergency department, those details about somebody's illness or injury can make all the difference. So there's a value in the retelling of the story, because you'd be surprised how many times somebody gives the next historian some little detail that they didn't give to the first one without intending to. It's just the way we tell stories, right? Second reason why it's really important is because each person who's taking care of that patient has to establish that relationship and has to develop an understanding of what the person is going through. We all experience this differently. So the way one person describes the feeling of angina pain that is the warning sign of heart attack to come is different than the way another person would describe it. And the way one of us hears that from the patient may be different than the way another one hears the same story. And all of that allows your healthcare team to give you the best possible care.
Good reasons why we may ask the same question more than once. Now, let's say somebody is lucky enough to have a condition for which they can leave the emergency room. Couple of important things. There's usually instructions on what to do, when to follow up, and those sorts of things. What are the most important tips that you could give patients that are about to be discharged so that they can understand what they need to do to make sure that they don't wind up back in the hospital again with something that got worse?
I think it comes down to just a couple of things. What am I supposed to do now? And when am I supposed to go to the next spot, whether that's my primary care doctor, a specialist, or return to the emergency department? The bottom line is, you know, we can put on the best show possible, give you the most spectacular explanations, prove that we studied super hard because we knew all the words, and yet the patient or their family might not understand what it was that we just said, which is fine. I mean, we don't expect everybody to speak the same language, whether that be the medical language or, you know, many of us in Hawaii have a second or third language. We want to make sure everybody understands what is happening to them, what they need to do next, where they're supposed to go before they leave the emergency department.
And bring the records so that you can have the EKG to show to your other doctor. So laboratory studies and things, these days they can be printed out when somebody leaves the ER.
That's right.
Here's all the test results.
And many of our physicians are on the same network where we can share information, but leave with all the information you need to make sure your primary care doctor takes the best possible care of you after the emergency department.
Wise words from an expert who definitely knows what it's like after over two decades in our emergency rooms. I want to thank you for sharing your expertise with us today on The Body Show.
It's my pleasure, Kathleen. Thanks for having me.
That's Dr. Jason Fleming, Kuakini Medical Center emergency room expert. If you'd like to hear this show again, you can click on hawaiipublicradio.org and follow the links to The Body Show. You can also find us on the HPR app. Our engineer is David Chong. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak, and we'll be right here next week, as we are every Monday at 6:30 on Hawaii Public Radio. We'll see you then.